speaking of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Which we're actually been talking about Santa Claus in the background. There's a new movie coming out. Have you seen it?
Is it the Kill Santa Claus thing that you like? Is it the sequel?
No. What? And that was called Violent Night.
Yeah.
An absolutely awesome freaking movie. Santa is real. Don't be on the naughty list. Do better. You need to watch that movie. It's absolutely something the kids would love.
Violent Night.
Do not let your children watch it.
Yeah, that sounds really bad idea.
Oh, it's freaking awesome. I mean, Santa's in there. And
my 8-year-old's going to love it.
Hey, I'm telling you, Santa comes out and he kicks ass on the bad guys. It's awesome. Mm. But there's a new one, Red One.
I think I have seen an ad on that one.
Oh, yeah. It's got The Rock in it and Chris Evans.
Yep.
You know, and then
I like both of them.
Yeah. Santa's kidnapped and The Rock is going after him.
Oh.
So it's like freaking awesome.
Why didn't you get the lead role on that then?
Well,
an authentic Santa.
Well, I am. But, you know, there is that dude who's a great character actor that was in, what the heck was he in? He's been a character actor in a lot of stuff. He was Whiplash. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
With Miles Teller? Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. It was up for an Academy Award, and I think it did well.
It did.
Yeah, you know, the guy in there that was the older guy. I can't remember what his name is. Whiplash. I can't remember what the guy's name is. But he's freaking awesome. He's a great character actor. He's Santa Claus.
Okay.
Flash cast. Terrence Fletcher. Oh, no. J.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
He's the dude.
Interesting.
Yep.
That comes out
like Thanksgiving weekend, doesn't it?
Yeah. Going to be there. Only in theaters. November 15th.
Okay.
I'm going to be watching that. I haven't been to a theater in a long time.
Last time we went to the theater, we saw Twisters.
I did not see Twisters at the theater.
It was really good in the theater.
Saw it on Apple TV. It was really good on Apple TV, too.
Oh, yeah. I like to rewatch it. My kids and I like to, like, once a month, go to dinner and go to the movies. Like a little kid date. Although they're like teenagers now. But I'm going to let them do it as long as they will. Because sooner or later, they're going to be like,
No more.
Yeah, I don't want to be around mommy anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Trust me. It's coming.
Yeah.
Way they go to college.
Oof. Never see him again.
My daughters did not think I was cool until they went to college.
It is weird how that works, because I remember it. Like, I steered clear of my parents until I was about 20 to 22. And I'm like, they're actually kind of smart. Like, I should listen to them more.
Well, what it was, they always talked to their mom. I mean, it was like all about the mom. I got three daughters, all about the mom. Then they go to college, the phone rings. Hey, what's up? Dad, I need this, I need that. Oh, what do I do here? It's like, dad's always important when they're away at college.
Yeah.
He's the fixer. Okay, we're going to get this thing started.
Let's get it started.
Okay. Oh, cue the intro. And we're back. We have a really cool intro, by the way.
Yeah.
You can cut that part. Do we have a really cool intro?
We do have a cool intro.
We do have a cool intro.
We don't have to cut that.
Did I say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our intro is cool.
Our intro is cool. We're at Stock Talk. We have Ben Green with us from Purple Ribbon Sync. Ben's already been busy on podcasting all morning long.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yep.
But, you know, we're glad to have you here. Tell you what, Ben, we've had a lot of conversations over the last few months, and want to talk a lot about your background. But first off, you know, it's interesting. You have this persona that you want to do. Oh, and by the way, Stock Talk is in person for the very first time.
Yes.
We are not remote, so that's kind of a cool deal. We're sitting in the podcasting studio of Cat Friends, Wolf Unleashed.
Yep, Wolf Unleashed podcast studio. And so that means that we're not going to have the YouTube for this one.
We're not.
Everyone has to listen to it.
It's too bad.
You know, Ben has already told us that he has a face for radio, which is my original thing from like 1982 when I first got on radio and said, this is perfect for me. But everybody's seen me on YouTube. They know I have a face for radio.
No, you don't.
I just choose not to be on video.
Well, I need to choose not to be on video.
You can.
Unless I'm Santa Claus. I'm very good at that.
Set boundaries.
Set boundaries.
Boundaries are healthy.
Yeah, boundaries are healthy. Ben, tell us why we are here in person rather than, you know,
On the line?
On the line.
Well, what was it? Three weeks ago we decided on this? Was it around then, about this date, or 2 weeks? I don't know. The weather looked good.
No. So you're jumping ahead already.
Oh.
Tell everyone why you don't like to be on the line.
You like in person.
I like in person because the energy is better.
I'm feeling kind of sedate. I think I need some more coffee.
You just had.
Yeah, you had a lot.
You just had coffee with like 2 shots of espresso.
I did.
I would be tasting colors if I drank that.
That's an interesting concept. I might like to see you do that.
Taste the rainbow. Just like
okay. Yep. So anyway, so you yep. like to be in person because energy's better. So yep. rather than doing this on the line, you were going to come down and visit us. Yep. And now you're here. But tell us about the trials and tribulations.
Of getting here?
Yeah.
Well, Francine got in the way.
Francine.
She came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Really. Legitimately. Like 4 days ago, she showed up out of nowhere. So, yeah, originally I was going to fly down here, in and out, would have been really quick and easy, and instead, I guess that's about 13-hour drive round trip.
It is a drive, yep. without a doubt.
But okay. It's not a bad drive.
No, I mean, it's not. Fine. It was neat. Yeah, it was a good drive.
So I had to drive over from Fayetteville, and you know what I found out? It seems relatively short after all the driving I've been doing, except for that last hour leg up 65. God, it is terribly dull.
I feel like, yeah, driving in the Delta is because it's just, I mean, okay, we work in agriculture, appreciate it, but I'd rather be like driving in the mountains and stuff.
Well, yeah, who wouldn't? Yeah. Did see a really cool thing yesterday. As I was driving up, a big 18-wheeler ran off the road in a very interesting format. I mean, he went off the road, off the 4-lane, in a curve. Into the woods, did not turn over, but man, did he tear up a lot of woods as he slid along in the mud. It was super cool.
Jeez. It was pouring yesterday.
There was a lot of water.
I really wish I had seen it, actually, instead of just the aftermath, you know, because right. it would have been great on video.
Yep.
You know. Okay, anyway.
Yep.
So you didn't fly down.
Didn't fly down. Drove.
Because of a hurricane.
Because That's of a hurricane.
Good reason. Yep.
What I was trying to drive at is tell us about... You know, being a pilot and being a, you know, having a plane and all that other good stuff.
It's awesome. Everybody should do it. Being a pilot is, well, it's about like anything. I mean, you got to put, it takes a fair amount of time and effort. And actually, if most people probably realized how much effort it took, they wouldn't do it. Same with me. Like if I would have known what I was getting myself into, I probably would have never done it because it's a lot of work. But it opens you up to... be able to get around and do things, you know, like this podcast. I could have done it in a day, like when I normally wake up and be down here in an hour and 45 minutes and turn around and be home by dinner. So
that's freaking awesome.
Yeah. It's like a time machine, basically.
That's freaking awesome.
Yep. And same thing with seeing customers. I have customers that are 6-hour drive, can get there in less than 2 hours.
That's some good stuff.
Yep.
Because driving's interesting, but boy, it does get to be long.
Yep.
Without a doubt. Okay. So, Ben, Purple Ribbon Seed, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on Stalk Talk with us, and, you know, a lot of times you downplay this, and I think that, and I get it, sometimes it's hard to talk about yourself, but, you know, you've got a really compelling backstory. And one of the things that we've talked about so many times is that as we look around the seed industry and agriculture in general, there's two different ways traditionally to get into the business. You're born into it or you marry into it. Man at Purple Ribbon, neither one of those is your story.
Neither one. Nope.
And for an industry that looks out there, and I mean, honestly, I've always talked about trying to attract other people into the industry. Dude, how did you get to Purple Ribbon Seed?
So I need to start out by saying I grew up in a small town with agriculture. Well, not actually out in the country. So agriculture all around me. My parents didn't farm. So that side of things is not foreign to me because I grew up around it. I did work at a seed company on the operations side in high school, bagging soybeans. So I was familiar with it from that perspective. When I went off to college, though, I did computer programming at Purdue University, got involved in an IT startup, you know, did that sort of thing for 11 years. We can go into that, but that's basically all you need to know, right? So I wasn't even thinking about ag. It wasn't on my radar. Nothing like that. So that startup started out very small. And by the time I left, you know, we had about 130 employees. We're probably doing 200 million in revenue, something like that. And it was time for me to go. I mean, the company had gone from the startup realm that I loved, kind of having extremely fast pace, not knowing what's going to come up the next day, just flopping around and making things work and seeing progress every day, to slowing way down, processes, procedures, which you need to have. You know, hindsight being 2020, I should have paid more attention during that period of time, because you have to have them in your business. But it just wasn't, me anymore. I didn't, you know, culturally, I don't think I fit in.
Process in any company.
It does.
It is, but it is a necessary evil.
You gotta have,
I mean,
it.
I'm right in the case. I'm there with you.
Have a repeatable procedure that anybody can jump in and figure out very quickly. So, and I think it can go way too far. So, you know, of course, when you buy your own company, and in my scenario, I bought a company, you take that with you and say, okay, we need to do this, but we need to be able to do it quickly. It needs to be repeatable, and I don't want a binder in the wall that nobody's ever going to look at. I want them to follow the procedure. So, but anyway, you know, back to that, I was ready to move on. I think, there were some things within the business that I didn't align with, anymore personally. And, my wife, her stepdad sold for the brand. And apparently the, previous owners of Purple Ribbon were looking for a married couple to take it over. So we met them at a customer appreciation dinner, and ended up having dinner with them a couple weeks later in Indianapolis. And I really wasn't interested in buying a seed company. I mean, I was fully invested in the IT realm and thinking about opportunities in that area. You know, we met with them, and I'm like, you know, some of those days of my life working in the operations side of the seed company, those were good days. Like, I enjoyed it. I liked what I was doing. I liked the family atmosphere. So, you know, why not give it a shot? So we did. So, you know, that was 11 years ago. We decided to buy a seed company.
See, that's crazy. It's a crazy thought. No background, you know, a little bit of work that you've done growing up in a small town, get it. But then to go from where you were in that totally different segment from IT into seed, I mean, I think it's inspiring and compelling. I really do. And I know I've said that to you and you disagree occasionally.
Well, I mean, so I suppose the message there is, I don't know if it's inspiring or compelling, but thinking of other people, if I do think that if someone is thinking about something that is non-traditional and maybe not what they, maybe not what they were going to school for or didn't go to school for or whatever, but they're, what they know, if it's not that, why not give it a shot? You know, and that's part of everything that I do. It's like, you start thinking, well, I'm 43, so technically, I mean, my midlife is over, right? So you think about how short life is and how fast things go. It's like,
now you're getting me thinking, if your midlife is over 43, I'm knocking on the door of it, the end of life.
Well, so the moral of the story is, do something you enjoy with people that you want to, that you can enjoy doing it with. So, and that's, we basically built the whole company around that, our customers and everything. I mean, it's built around that. So,
Well, what is it they say? If you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Oh, it's work. Owning a business, nobody can say that every day is awesome, because most days are probably actually not awesome. But when you build your business in such a way that you have a great customer base that you have close relationships with, you can turn a bad day into a good day really, really quickly. For example, when I was driving down here, Lindsay and I were talking about an issue we were having at work. I mean, I was freaking pissed at the time. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, it's just one of those things, like, we're better than this and that sort of thing. And there was nobody to blame but myself. Like, it's just me not tracking a problem properly. And so I'm like, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I haven't talked to this customer for a while. This guy's awesome. I call him within 5 minutes. It's like my day's turned back around and we're good, you know? So, I mean, you got to recognize when things are going wrong and use your great customer base to, I hate to say that, I'm not using them, because I do appreciate them and love talking to them. And that's exactly why I called him. I'm like, I like talking to this guy. He's going to turn my day around. And he did. So
that's awesome. And you're right. I mean, every day in business is, for yourself, it's not a great day. I think I mentioned to you last night as we were having a drink and visiting a little bit, that first day I got on blood pressure medication was the first week that we had to make a payroll. Yeah. So it was a really exciting deal. But, you know, there is that aspect of dealing with customers wherever they are. You know, customers that have problems and you can solve those problems, and then customers that have great experiences. And you know it's all about what you're doing as a business. It's very fulfilling.
Yep, it is. Absolutely is.
Tell me a little bit about Lindsay.
Yep.
Okay, and here's the reason. She's going to love this as she's listening to this.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Talk to me about Lindsay's role in the business with you.
Okay, so Lindsay has a finance background. She actually went to IU for finance. So, I mean, she understands numbers. And that's basically what she does. You look at the business and we do about 50-50. I manage sales, not marketing, which we talked about at the last podcast, and operations side and things like that, genetic product selection, all that good stuff. She manages customer relationships way more than probably anybody really realizes, because she does all the invoicing, all the billing. She maintains our financial statements, works with we have multiple accountants now, not just one, and we different firms for different sides of the business. She manages all of our DOT stuff for our semis. I mean, all that sort of paperwork related things that require attention to detail and tracking, she does all that. And she yells at me for not submitting orders and not properly updating our CRM, which I built myself. You know, it's like, yeah, I built this. I should be able to keep orders straight. But she does all that. So she's the foundation, the glue that keeps everything working. And honestly, without her role, our business would, I'm not going to say fail, but I mean, it feels like it would, because she makes customers happy. So, people want to call in and talk to her, even if they don't have a billing question.
Well, I can see that. You know? So, but what you're telling me is that Purple Ribbon, as it is today, is really a family business between you and her.
Yep. Yep. Well, and actually my brother-in-law works for us too on the operations side.
Okay.
That's all he's ever done is work. Actually, he worked at Purple Ribbon when it was up in Remington, Indiana. So, I mean, he knows the seed industry. He knows the operations side. He can set all of our cleaning machines and everything. He just knows that stuff. And he can teach everybody else that too.
So, you know, I got to tell you, and, you know, as I'm thinking back across people that I've known the time that I've been in the industry, there have been some really, there's a lot, and I'm going to mention three, because they're the three go-tos that I think about, and they all happen to be very good friends with one another also. But these compelling husband-wife teams that are really strong. And I mean, I think about Carl and Julie Peterson.
Yep.
You know, I always get a chuckle out of that because of what Carl says about Julie and then what Julie will say about Carl. But, I mean, wow, they are a team. And they have built a really successful business. I look at Chuck and Chris Cornelius, yep. You know, obviously family business, but what they've done together. And then two that are no longer within the business but sold their business a few years ago, Lou and Regina Bice at Golden Acres. Again, you know, all three of those really strong husband-wife teams that work together and really changed the industry and have been just ardent IPSA supporters and built strong businesses. I think that's really super cool. So I'm glad to hear that you and Lindsay are following
it. It is neat. I mean, so you think about that, like issues we had with working in the real world, corporate world is life is short. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got married. She's my best friend. I mean, we're friends. Like we're not only are we married, but we're friends. Like we hang out together. It's really weird concept, but so we actually like being at work together. I know that's really weird too, but yes, we have days when we fight or things that aren't quite right, because it's usually business related that we're arguing. It's not us. And I'll go out and walk corn or whatever, even in February when it's not growing. But, I mean, it is. It has strengthened. It forces, as a husband and wife, it forces you to communicate. Not only, I mean, when you're a family-owned business, your personal life and business life, they're all intertwined. There's no separating that. Everybody says there's balance. It's like, no, the whole thing is a balance. And including having your kids involved in it too. So it forces you to communicate. And I know I still need to be a better communicator. She's a better communicator about things than I am. I'm not. I'm just, in my mind, the solution happens and I just go do. And she's like, what are you doing? You know, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was an inside word that I didn't have outside, you know? So, but it forces you to do some of that. And I mean, hindsight being 2020, it wasn't our intention to make our marriage stronger, but it made our marriage stronger because we had to talk, you know? So, and we had a good marriage before. So
I'm chuckling because I'm thinking about the fact of, my wife, Marty, and mm-hmm. I, and although we don't have a seed business, we now have this hospitality business, and she's our CFO, and I think it's made us stronger in the fact that neither one of us are dead and we're not divorced. But I always thought it was funny. So we got this little office and, you know, I said, okay, this is perfect. Here, the big office. This is my office. The second biggest office at the other end of the hall is your office. And she said, no, I want this little office right beside mine. It's the smallest office in the place. Why do you want to do that? But I just like it. I thought, no, this is not a good thing. We do not need to share a common wall. But we do, because that's what she wanted. I can't always say it's a good thing, but I can say our communication is probably enhanced because she always hears what I'm talking about. So there you go. Yep.
There you go.
Like I said, not dead, not divorced. It must be okay.
Must be okay.
All right. Well, dude, there's a few things that also I want to talk about. And Ipsos, one of them. But beyond that, continuing to talk about Purple Ribbon, you kind of have got some unique things that you do when you talk to customers and when you work with customers. Right. And I say unique, and I know that you've told me a couple of times, look, it's not innovative, it's not this, but you're executing on some things that most people are not doing and doing it in a different way.
Sure.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming you're wanting to talk about, like, videos of products and fields.
I want to talk about videos and products, about products and field, in the field, man. I think that's all it is.
I mean, part of it is, you know, like when I first started doing this thing, I would go out. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing, right? Because I have no background in this. So you spend time out in the field, you look at your products, and you try to figure out what makes them different, why they're different. And eventually what happens is when you start looking at corn and soybeans, they actually look like people, meaning there's differentiators between them, and you start to see all that stuff, and this is going to be good at this, and this is going to be bad at that, right? So that's all it was. That's how it started. But what happened when I did that is I'm in a customer's field when I do that. And then I got caught and I didn't tell them I was going to do it. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm just making sure your product's all right. They're like, nobody does that. Like the co-op kind of looks at it and tells me when I need to spray something. I'm like, no, man, I'm trying to figure out if we made the right decision or not. And they're like, you know, blown away by this. And I'm like, okay, well, we can go places with this now. I'm kind of realizing that nobody does anything here, and I'm just out doing this. What you really find behind the scenes is actually independents do it all the time. It's just the major brands that don't. So so I'm like, how can I make this one step further? I happen to have a friend that I met through an entrepreneur group that I'm in, and he did video selling. So Chris Saunders out in North Carolina, he was the one who introduced it to me. We were in a kind of a private meeting in Chicago, and he brought all his video equipment, and he's like, stand in front of the camera and start talking, you know, and say something about what's Purple Ribbon, and, you know, throwing all these questions at me. And I'm like, I am dumbfounded. I can't answer these things. And he's like, you need to buy a camera. You need to build this room. I'll send you the specs and stand in front of the camera and figure this out and start recording it and figure out how to send that to your customers. And so I did. That's exactly what I did. And then I realized,
you know. So this is a room you have in the house?
This is a room I have in our office.
In the office?
Yep.
Okay.
So we do that, you know, can do video selling type things and custom videos to send to customers and things like that, or prospects. But then
just
I'm like.
Just via email or text?
Email, text, yeah. If they have iPhones, it's super easy. Facebook Messenger, whatever you want to use. So that side of it's a little more difficult because there's editing and stuff involved and to make it look good. And I usually upload it on YouTube, and it's a private shareable link so I can see how many times it's watched and things like that and get some basic metrics off of it. But the ones that probably get the most engagement, most traction, so to speak, is when you're actually out in the customer's fields and you see the products, good and bad, and saying, I'm seeing this. We should do this again because it went right, or we need to address this. This isn't going to work next year. And you send that to them. Most of them now I just text it to them, although if they have an Android, they should buy an iPhone, and then they should also, you know, I upload it on YouTube and just send them a link, but I can track to see, you know, make sure they watched it, or 9 times out of 10, they send me a 10 out of 10. Basically, they send me a text message and say, yes, you're right. I see the same thing now. Let's alter it. So not only are you trying to build, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to build loyalty, but I want them to show that I probably care about their outcome as much as they do.
Well, you're building trust. You're building, and so that,
I mean,
that becomes,
you're doing all
loyalty.
That, but that wasn't necessarily my goal.
Right.
My goal was just, I want them to, you know, we had this discussion just a minute ago. I wanted them to win because if they win, then I win.
Right.
And everybody wins. And why don't you want that? And that's, you know, and I want them to know that if they see something, ask me. But I'm trying to see something for them. And I just want them to do the best that they possibly can. Because I would say that 2%, we talked about that multiple times. If you can do 2 to 3% better than everybody else over 1,000, 2,000 acres, that's actually significant, right? So that's all I'm trying to accomplish with it. So.
No, and I get that. I think that the...
And operationally, I don't want to hire a bunch of people. I've been burned so many times hiring people that I wanted to create more time for myself. And that was the way to do that, right? Because I'm not having to schedule a meeting with them. I know where their fields are, or maybe I'm looking at their neighbor's field and they say, hey, my neighbor's got this problem. I'm like, send me his phone number and I'm going to go check a look, you know, and that's how you meet a new person and send them the thing, send them the video. But that's all I'm trying to do is just, make time for myself so I can spend more time trying to sell, but not really sell because I hate actually selling and I hate the term of that, but just help them do better. And I don't even care if it's my product.
No, and so you made a mention of a couple of things that we need to note. Number one, I think it's really cool that you're out there in the field. I mean, I think it's an important aspect that I agree. I think the independents probably do a much better job of than the nationals. There's too much of what I would say is, okay, I've got that sale, it's done, walking away, I'll come back to them and call them again next year. And look, I get it. Some farmers may want that, but I would be one of those people that would want to understand that people are vested in my success as well. And I've always believed that seed is the most emotional decision that a farmer can make. Consider
purchase.
Oh, I mean, it is.
Equipment is too, but you look at those expenditures, and it's not like just buying a fungicide or a, you know, glyphosate. You know, there's nothing sexy about that.
If you get the wrong hybrid and you put the wrong hybrid out, that's going to affect you. It is going to hit you hard, no question. So, you know, making sure that you've got the right thing out there is really going to be important. So I like that idea. I think it's part of the independent buying experience, but specifically I think it is a different experience buying with Purple Ribbon because of the way that you approach it,
which is not any industry. I mean, I learned it from other industries.
Sure.
I mean, look at a good home contractor is going to send you videos because you're at work doing whatever. And they're like, hey, we got your windows installed. Hey, check this out. And they shoot it over to you. You're going to call them again? Probably so, because 99% of them don't do it. So, and the same thing with working on cars. It's like, hey, we got this done. Send you the video. Boom. It's like, okay, I'm going back to there. That guy just made me feel good for the day.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. But again, 99% of the people don't do it. It may be a coming thing that people are starting to do more, but I mean, it's 99% that do not. I think that we also have to, you know, note a very important aspect of what you said, which is green bubble people are just not as good as blue bubble people.
Green bubble people.
Android versus iPhone.
I mean, you clearly said it. If, you know, they need to go to an iPhone. Blue bubble people are better.
Apple should pay us.
This should be sponsored by Apple 100%.
Wait, you mean the fruit company that doesn't sell fruit?
The fruit company that sells technology, right?
Okay.
Well, we're not talking about my old company, so I can...
We can actually say it.
I can say it.
Yeah, okay. We need a sponsorship from Apple.
I agree, yeah.
Blue bubble people are better. So, yep, you know, green bubble people, get rid of those Androids. Yep. Go to iPhone. Yep. There's a new iPhone out, iPhone 16.
One
send,
of the boys.
Send a five of those at least to IPSA.
Yeah. And
that way we can...
There you go. Yeah.
One of the boys wanted, they like the new Samsung, whatever it is. I don't know. But they're like, Mom, this phone is so cool. So when we get new phones, like, can I do that? And I was like, when you don't live in this house, because if I'm paying for your phone and you live in my house, you will have blue bubbles. And they're like, okay.
Sorry. I know.
It's all right. I had an Android for a very long time.
Never have had. Well, I think in 2010, before the iPhone was really a big deal. But once I got an iPhone 4, it was over.
Yep.
Every year.
They hooked me.
Yeah. I had a BlackBerry before I got an iPhone.
You had a BlackBerry?
BlackBerry
really?
Pearl, yeah. It was so cool.
I had a BlackBerry too. And, you know, it was a constant upgrade of doing something different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. iPhone, better.
Oh, yeah.
Like it. At least I'm ingrained. Okay. So, Talk to me a little bit about IPSA. And in here's the reason I want to do this. So when I became CEO of IPSA back in March of 2015, you were a member of IPSA right off the bat.
Yep.
And then about 2018, you said, nah, I'm out. And then I pursued you for a long time, and I felt like I always got the finger from you. But thankfully, you are back now. So I guess a couple of things that I'd like to ask, good and bad. What led to the decision to leave? What led to the decision to come back? And in really asking that with 100% of transparency for the good and bad, what your impressions were in both times?
So leaving was just, I didn't, at that time, I didn't understand what value you guys brought, right? We would go to a yearly meeting, and it was cool. You have some breakout sessions and things like that, and neato. You know, I mean, it's good information. I'm not putting that down at all, but it's just like, I didn't see how that crossed over into the seed industry. I was also in that entrepreneurs group at the same time. So I was seeing, I mean, I spent September 11th with Rob O'Neill on the rooftop of a bar. I mean, that's pretty tough to beat. For people that don't know, he killed Bin Laden. He was the Navy SEAL that shot him. So I mean, that's a whole completely different concept than going to a seed meeting. So I'm not trying to say, you know, it's just, I was getting more out of that at the time. What I didn't realize is that that's great for business, but that doesn't help me necessarily in the seed industry, which is a very niche industry. So, you know, we got all these mergers and everything going on, and I'm like, I have no freaking clue what's going on other than what's in the news. And that's about the time I came back, because I'm like, all right, now I understand why we need an advocate. Now I understand why I should be part of this organization. And quite honestly, like I told you, I guess, I mean, everybody knows I'm a board member, I think, that are in IPSA. I better do some time and help solve some of those issues, right? I don't want to, but I need to. I don't know if I'm going to pass the seed company down to my kids or not. I have no idea. But I got to at least lay the groundwork for them to have the opportunity. So what better battle to fight than David and Goliath? So with Todd Martin, who was also a Santa Claus.
Yeah, well, ho, ho, ho. I haven't gotten into the ho, ho, ho voice yet. This year I'm trying to work on it, but it's slow coming. But I am going to Santa school here in about a month, so maybe that'll help me out a lot.
Bring that Christmas cheer.
Yeah. They make us sing Christmas songs every break. I mean, we'll sing Christmas songs like 20 times a day.
I'm glad you enjoy it. Yeah, well, this sounds very weird.
It is incredibly weird with 300 Santas running around. Yeah,
it's wow.
It's a lot of...
My kids are not going to be able to listen to this. My daughter obviously is old enough to not believe. I'm not certain on my son. So I'm going to have to wait a couple of years.
Oh, we may have to strike this. You know, take that whole thing out.
No, I'll just wait a couple of years. He can listen to it later.
Okay.
In life.
I can just send you like an edited version that he could listen to that strikes all of this.
Just so you know, the Charles W. Howard School for Santas is the longest running school for Santas in the country. It was founded.
So is this, oh, this isn't the third year.
No, this is like this is like the 88th year of Holy Santa Claus. Cow. And it was Charles W. Howard was like the original Macy's Santa Claus.
Okay.
Wow, and cool. Got it started. So, you know, based off of Miracle 34th Street that is off of him. So it's kind of a cool deal, but they have a hard, fast rule. They'll have 300 students there. You cannot wear Santa gear.
Really? Okay.
They do not. They believe that Santa should never be seen together. Okay. Of course, then you got like 280 of them that have real beards and, you know, they look like Santa Claus is running around, whether they're wearing a red coat or not. So yep. That kind of defeats the purpose. But anyway, where was I going with that? You brought it back up. I think the issue coming back on the IPSA piece, and I appreciate what you said. And, you know, one thing at IPSA is that the value proposition is interesting and floats around with regards to independent seed companies. We try to focus on building, you know, business building activities. But a lot of our, let's call it advocating situations, we don't toot our own horn. We right. have we have should. Really... Yes,
it's a
and
sticky
no.
situation.
It is a sticky situation. Very so, sticky. You know, there are times that we do and don't. But, you know, when we get involved, in situations. They are to the specific service of independent seed companies. So we're not looking at the seed industry at large. That's really ASSA's purview. They've got the money, they've got the people, and they can focus on the big ticket issues with regards to the seed industry that are going to affect everything from veg seed companies to whatever. You know, there's a big, big tent there. We're really focused on that independent sector in corn and soy. You know, we'll touch a few other commodities, but it's about the independence and how we end up maintaining that overall business going forward and how we, you know, can support that way of life. So it is a bit of a sticky thing that we don't have a true opportunity to talk about a lot of things that we're doing. Now, we'll tell you, we're heading to Washington next week, as a matter of fact. So I think that we'll probably air this sometime and that we'll have already been in Washington, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. we're heading over there. And what are we doing? Well, we've got a meeting put together with the USDA at USDA. We'll have DOJ representatives there as well, and we're going to have some EPA representatives. And what we're taking on behalf of the independent seed companies is the Agriculture Biotechnology Stewardship Technical Committee, otherwise known as ABSTEC, that is comprised of the four trait providers. And we've been trying for 4 years to get that opened up to get other seats at the table, including independent seed companies, because independent seed companies, you know, are facilitate traits to other farmers. But also I'd like to have partners with National Cotton Council, National Corn Growers also there. But the by and large is that this committee was originally formed to help deal with stewardship issues and refuge. Well, today it's evolved more into a policy discussion arm that is very difficult to break into. It's run by just a few people in Washington that have been running it for a long time. And we're trying to get them to move around with regards to regulations that will enhance the opportunity for post-patent traits to come into the marketplace, which we think is positive for farmers and seed companies alike. And quite frankly, they're not on that page. They're fighting us. They want to remove products from the market, and they're helping perpetuate you know, situations that are keeping prices up. So that's a battle that we have been fighting for a while, and this is somewhat of an inflection point that I feel pretty good about, that not only some of the things that the EPA is doing is are wrong, but they're anti-competitive. So we finally got a good form with USDA and DOJ there. And hopefully we can push the EPA.
Yep.
And the cool thing about it is a few months ago, they, you know, the Chevron doctrine, as they call it, got overturned, which, you know, stopped government agencies for going beyond laws that were passed by Congress and doing some different things, of which EPA is enormously guilty. So hopefully we can use that as a lever to get some dial back on what they're doing. But anyway, it's technical stuff from the standpoint, and it's highly controversial in some areas, and not everybody would be super happy to hear IPSA was doing that, but the independents would.
Well, honestly, on all that stuff, you think about it in general, the average consumer, if they really understood the process of food creation and the seed industry, they'd be floored. Like, I mean, that... I'm talking from outside in, and, you know, I mean, I can say a bunch of things because it's like I didn't grow up in this. And then you get in here and you look at this and you're like, oh, my goodness. Like, how did we get here? This is where we got. We got not only to a point where farmers aren't really listened to anymore, even though we do things for the farmers. And I'm saying we as a seed industry, not we as a independent companies. But those decisions aren't made for a farmer. It's made in a boardroom. Like, you can feel it. Like, so there's really no reason to lie there because your customers, big ag, talk about it all the time. That's part of my job. 50% of it seems like is talking them down because they're so frustrated. There's big mountains that they can't move. And it's like, if they could go somewhere else, they would be gone so fast. And it's like, how do you not understand as a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company, what your real customers, I don't know who you're calling on your marketing, but you're not calling the 2,000 to 4,000 acre farmer. So you might be calling the 80,000 acre farmer that's maybe getting a kickback somewhere, but it's like you're not talking to probably 80% of your customer base. There's no way. So I can't be running into this. And if this is off record, cut it out of here. But it's just like, that's where it's at. And we gotta fight that fight. And the bad thing is honestly, if the CEOs actually did pay attention more, they probably would care. It's not that, you know, it's not that they've got their own issues too of like, hey, we got quarterly earnings. We got to meet. We got a whole board that is expecting these things out of us. And we're kind of neglecting our customers at the same time. You know, and it's like, just get back to working with everybody and thinking about your customer.
You got to think.
You will make more money long term. I realize these next two quarters might be bad, but whoever you are that picks up on this, you could have 80% of the share if you just listen to your customers.
Well, you know, but here's the thing. I mean, let's face it. Corporations are inherently non-persons. They are in the pursuit of profit. They're in pursuit of increasing shareholder value. They're not in.
I wouldn't want to be a shareholder of a few of them right now.
Well, they're suffering. Ag is suffering in general. I mean, I think that we saw that, you know, we've seen over the last few months that Bayer is having enormous difficulties because of the Roundup lawsuits. And, you know, they were having problems with dicamba. So they've said at one point they don't have free cash. You're looking at Syngenta's cutting people in Basel, Switzerland, just got announced, which, God, a 10% cut on the workforce there used to be a protected thing at Syngenta because of the, you know, Swiss home. But it's because of the downturn there. And to the point, corporations value shareholders. They are not worried about customers. Customers are not the focus anymore. That is at the crux of what every independent seed company should grasp onto. The customer is more valued there. Now, look, I know that there are sales reps out there in the field working for everybody that love their customers, but the reality is Purple Ribbon Seed, Bex, whoever you want in the independent space, values the customer more than multinational corporations has to, because that is where the good of their business lands. The other side of it is it has to be about shareholders. It's about shareholder value. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that the persons in the chairs when they get away, the CEOs, the higher-ups, when they get away from thinking about, okay, we've got to make these quarterly profits, yeah, I think they really want to care. But I think that the, you know, need and the demand from shareholders and stock price, I think, overwhelms that.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that is where we are today. But I think there's got to be a better way to get there.
I feel the same way.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody that is a multinational corporation is probably going to turn in their resignation to IPSA, you know, after this podcast airs.
Well, we can cut it out.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. I don't think we really cut anything. We just talk.
No. Yeah.
I mean, in general, though, it's the same principles that the whole nation could use right now, is just care about the other person a little bit more. Think about their position. Listen. It's not that difficult.
No. Yeah, it's not that difficult, but we're not doing a very good job of listening to each other right now. That's for darn sure. Well, Ben, tell me, what would you say to somebody like yourself? As in, I'm not involved in the ag industry right now. I'm looking for something that I really want to be passionate about. Maybe I've done some of this stuff. What would you tell somebody that is thinking about coming into the seed industry?
Boy, that's, I mean, immediately you know, my initial gut reaction is if
run away,
no, run away. No, I mean, so that I start off as like, if this is something you want to do and you think you're going to be passionate about it, then get involved, find somebody. I mean, there's independent seed companies everywhere. That's where I tell you to go, because you're going to learn the most there. They're going to actually like take the time to care to teach you to do whatever. And they're looking for people that want to go do these things and make a positive impact on a customer base. You know, this sounds all blah, 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 good, but that's what it is. Like legitimately, if you're working for me, like, and something bad happens, it's not like, hey, Purple Ribbon screwed up. It's Ben Green screwed up. Like, I messed up. And you may have done it, and you may have said something that, or done something that messed up, but ultimately it's me, not the business. And because of that, inherently, the owners of those companies are just going to do better trying to build you up and make you successful. And I just feel that's the way it is. If you want into big ag, big numbers, big transactions and probably just go work at a co-op. And I hate to say that because we've had mergers locally on stuff like that. And guess what? Your average customer didn't want to do this, even though you said they did. Like, I mean, I hear it every day, so it's not, maybe they're lying to me. But so yeah, get involved with somebody that wants to do it and wants you to be successful also. But yeah, I mean, if I knew what I was getting myself into, I probably would have ran away. I mean, because I didn't realize how much work it was going to take. I didn't realize how bad most days were going to be. I didn't realize how you literally are fighting multinationals, and you're supposed to be working together, but it's really not. It's a directed work together. You know, like you got to work within these bounds and make sure an account for every bag, and you owe me this amount of money. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. It's a transaction. It is not a partnership in any way, shape, or form. It is a transaction. And if you feel like it is more than that, then you need maybe take some personal relationship classes or something, because it's pretty obvious. And I just hate. I'm the type of guy that's very blunt. There's no reason to walk around this at all. Like, it is a transactional relationship, unfortunately. And it probably didn't used to be that way. So from the seed industry perspective, that's very difficult because you can only do so much. Like, it's going to be very difficult to change the world from the seed industry perspective.
So what's the thing that keeps you up at night that you worry about the most?
How long does an independent stay relevant? I mean, I don't think about it just for me. I pivoted once. I'll pivot again. Dabble in real estate a little bit and do other things. I'll be fine. But for friends like the Wilkins, it's like, that's all they know. Those guys are my friends. I want to see them pass it on to their grandkids because that's all they ever know. The Cornelius is the same way. Like, I've built relationships with my competitors. And I would do anything for them. It's like those guys, like, that's their life. So I worry about, I mean, what happens if it does get pulled away?
Well, I will tell you.
And I do. My kids seem to enjoy this too. So, like, maybe they do want this, you know? So I want to have a business that they can get involved in and be involved and work with great people also. So, but the multi-gen seed company owners, oh, man. I guarantee this keeps them awake at night too.
And I got to tell you, it's one of the things that keeps me up at night. I mean, it's the passion that is easy to get behind to fight because, we've always believed that, you know, agriculture people are some of the best folks around. Farmers are the best people on the planet. But, you know, seed people are different. They're the salt of the earth. They're just some really, really good people out there that enjoy being with. Yep. And, you know, I want to see this opportunity on what they have to be able to continue. And I do think it's under fire. I've used the analogy several times about, okay, well, you know, we're similar in the independent seed space to independent hardware stores, independent pharmacies. And, you know, there is some truth there. And both of those industries, while, you know, transformed by big, huge box stores, box retailers, whether it's, you know, CVS or Walgreens or Lowe's or Home Depot, you know, they still exist and they still have a unique buying experience and they still do well. There's not as many of them, but they do. The ones that exist have found new ways to get customers and do fine. The one challenge that I think is that happens out there, though, is in those situations, their competitors are not their suppliers.
Yep.
And that's a differentiating fact in the seed industry that is still hard to come up with, that your biggest competitors are also your suppliers.
Yep.
So.
Yep, that is. And that's a very, you know, as just in business in general, and I always look at numbers, like no matter what it is, even within outside of the seed industry and business, like the U.S. economy, I'm always looking at things in terms of numbers. And, it hit me the other, probably a couple of years ago, where I kind of realized, I'm like, man, how do they do this? Like, how do they afford to do this? Well, and I won't use any dollar amounts, but a really good friend of mine and customer, grows all non-GMO. He has non-GMO contracts that he does. And, we've been working together for quite a while. And I always go in, like when I approach a situation like that, we're writing an order for the next year. I mean, yeah, I got to make money. but I'm not here to try and rob you. So like I look at my numbers and come up with whatever that dollar amount is, you know, and I'm probably mostly 100% on his farm, and I give it to him. I'm like, here's where I'm at. And he just laughs and he says, my major competitors are not double, but it is drastically more. So what's that tell me? Well, from a non-GMO perspective, we're not dealing with biotech traits, and I'm able to be that much more efficient. Imagine if I had that much more money for every bag. Oh my God, I'd have a sales force. Everybody would drive a pickup. We'd waste money on fuel. We'd waste money on this and that. And it's like, oh, okay, now it all makes sense. That's how I can be competitive there, way more than competitive. But when we get into biotech traits, it's just we try to. We're never going to be the cheapest supplier, so we just got to try to do those extra things to make up, you know, sell value. So, but no, to actually try to make up those percentages and show the guys the difference between how well we grow our product and give them a quality product versus here's what it looks like when you buy it from a big machine that's, you know, grown by an 80,000 acre farmer and 10,000 of his corn acres are seed corn. So look at the germination scores on that, specifically saturated gold germs. I mean, you just look at the two. I mean, you can see how things were handled poorly, and that translates to dollars and cents in a early planting scenario. I mean, it's math. They will never be able to fix that. I can. So, and those are the ways, the niche ways that I know most independents I would think are doing this sort of thing. But that's how you make yourself relevant. Cause you're never going to win on prize.
Well, and that, but holy smokes, that is the best way to be able to say, again, be successful. The buying experience all around with independents is different, and you just highlighted it. You can be specialized in the areas relevant to your customers and give them things that just from a size standpoint, other companies can't deliver.
Right.
Awesome. Well, Ben Green, thank you for joining us on Stomp Talk.
You're welcome.
Especially for the long drive.
Yeah.
Yep.